Hey folks, I hope you're having a fantastic day today, because I always have a good podcast, I think. So why don't you let me know? Put it in the show notes, give me a call, shoot me off an email, any one of those things to let me know how I'm doing. And also let me know if there's a topic that you want to hear about on a podcast, as well as if you want to be a guest or if you know anybody who might want to be a guest. But today, I have a conversation with Cynthia Gurman, and we're going to talk about her book, A Voice from Heaven. Now, this book was authored by herself and her son, Alexander. But the interesting thing is, he helped her author this book after his death. Yeah, you heard me say that right. After he died, he helped her author this book. So that might sound strange to all of you out there, or maybe just to some of you, but he died of an overdose at a young age of 22. So we're going to talk about overdose. We're going to talk about how this affects the loved ones, the ones that are left behind. Also, we're going to find out a little bit about heaven and some of the messages that, you know, she received. So please remember, follow, like, and also thank you for always being here, and thank you for continuing to support this channel. And remember, if you are a pet owner, please be responsible and have your pets spayed or neutered. All right, let's do it. Cindy Gurman, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here, Chuck. I've been really excited about it.
I have too, because you have such a story to tell about your book, A Voice from Heaven, and your son who helped you co-write that. And we'll get into that in a little bit. But, you know, you have experienced what I would say is really profound grief. Many people have, but you have. But I was wondering if you can really tell us how grief has changed you.
You know, grief, it really changes you forever. It's like always after that, it's after someone really close to you dies, it's always the before and the after.
What if someone told you that you could learn the secret to happiness or success? Maybe you have an interest in mental health or the unknown, or even the desire to communicate with the dead. These are the real stories and encounters from the real people. And here's your host, Chuck Tuck.
You know, it just affects you, every part of you, every part of your life, physically and emotionally. And after our son died, I was like in a complete fog for months and months and months, practically a year. And I didn't know if I was going to be able to go on. You know, it really affects you that much. And it's a shame that a lot of people don't realize that, like employers don't realize that. You know, there are not like, you know, lengthy, you know, kinds of support systems in place for right. employees that
should be. That is so true. Really. Yeah, it's, you know, because each and every one of us go through grief differently, and mm-hmm. the time that it takes for us to, I don't want to say heal, but to maybe come to terms with it, differs. Some really can immediately accept it, because it might have been something that was coming, the significant other person's death was impending. You knew that it was coming, so you could prepare for it. But when it's something sudden, that is what's difficult.
That's very difficult. And I like to say that you never get over it. You learn how to walk beside it. Oh. Because it's always going to be there with you.
Yes.
That grief.
Yeah, it is. Can I ask you, or were there certain things that you did to help you overcome your grief?
Yes. In fact, it happened coincidentally. We were actually gifted a session with a medium. And I know some people don't believe in mediums, and I was very skeptical at first. But it really helped me to understand that he was there in the afterlife. He was surrounded by unconditional love. You know, you never stop worrying about your kids, ever. I mean, even after Alec died, I was like, is he lost in the ether? Is he all alone? Is it, you know, what's happened to him? You know, I mean, what happens when we die? But knowing that he was surrounded by unconditional love and just totally encompassed by that, and total acceptance and forgiveness, really helped me to come to terms somewhat with it. I was still having a lot of grief, but at least I knew that he was okay. And that gave me a lot of comfort.
You know, I said this at the very beginning while we're just having a conversation, but I'm gonna say it again. This is really odd. Where are you noticing how my picture dims like that and comes back with the light? And for you folks who are listening or watching, this is something that has never happened. And we're talking about Cindy's son and the afterlife. And, you know, maybe it's a stretch, but maybe there is someone, something that is, no joke, that is causing this. So
we're going to talk about you, son.
Right. Yeah, as you said, yes. And I've had a death of, you know, someone very close and dear to me as well. But yeah, we're going to get into that in a little bit. But, you know, your son passed away, died from an overdose, right? Of an opioid?
Yes. Yes. And it was an overdose. It was kratom toxicity. The alkaloid is mitrogenine and 7-hydroxymitrogenine, but it was kratom toxicity. Kratom is an unregulated substance that's available without a prescription. You can get it in convenience stores, gas stations, bars even, online, vape shops, you know, things like that. At low doses, it acts like a stimulant, but at high doses, it acts like an opioid. So it has that sedative kind of effect, and it also has risks at high doses. Addictive properties that can occur. It also interacts with commonly prescribed substances like products for anxiety and depression that people using kratom would, you know, may have anxiety and depression and be taking those drugs. And it can cause seizures and ventricular arrhythmia and death at those high doses, especially chronically.
And I'm not really familiar with, but for folks who have never heard of kratom, it is plant-based. So yes. It's not an artificial synthetic drug, really. Right. It's plant-based, and just because it's plant-based doesn't mean that it's 100% safe.
Right, and it's especially, I think there's especially a risk when you take it with other substances, whether they be illicit, other opioids or whatever, or whether they be prescription drugs, because it does have some interactions with some common prescription drugs, and that's where you get into trouble when you take it with other things. Kratom can cause increased potency of those other products, and that can really get you into trouble. The other thing to watch out for is that there are manufacturers that are advertising high-strength kratom and high-potency kratom, and what they're doing is they're adding things to it, like other opioids or fentanyl, or they're boiling it down and making it really concentrated as an extract. So you don't know how much you're getting when you get the product. You don't know what kind of concentration there is. And so you can get into those high dose issues pretty quickly without knowing it.
I'm not a medical expert, doctor, or anything like that. But, you know, folks may think and say, oh, it's plant-based, I'm going to liken it to marijuana. It's not. So don't, you know, like Cindy's saying, really those high doses and concentrations, anything like that, don't mix it with your any other drugs. If you're in a if you're depressed, don't vape it, don't smoke it, don't use it, anything. I'm going to say stay away from it, probably. Period.
Yeah, I mean, the low dose is a lot. People get benefit at low doses for pain and anxiety, but keep it to the low doses and do your homework. Make sure that you're getting it from a reputable, you know, manufacturers, that they're not added ingredients that you don't know about.
Yeah. That's really good advice on that. Yeah, reputable, and do your due diligence in your homework, and just make sure you know what else you're taking before you take this or anything else.
Right. So, exactly.
You've gone through the grief. Well, I here again, I'm choosing the wrong words by saying you've gone through it. You haven't gone through it. You're probably forever in it. Somehow, some way, you grieve. You just accept and deal with it. But what are some of the things that, what do I want to say, to watch out for during one's recovery? Maybe yourself and grief, and maybe if you can give some pointers on an addict who's going through recovery as well.
Yeah, so it's a hard question because everyone is different, right?
Yes.
Everyone reacts differently to recovery and to grief. Our son was doing really well in recovery. He had been in recovery for 20 months and he had a job that he really liked, and he was doing well. But his recovery was during COVID, and there was a lot of, you know, isolation because there was a lot of shutdown and things like that. When he was working, he was really excited when the company was about to open up again and people were going to come back on campus and everything. But then 3 weeks later, they shut down because people were getting COVID. So there was a lot of isolation with him. And that led to, I think, a lot of, depression. That's when sort of triggers really you're vulnerable to those triggers and cravings. If they didn't have cravings, I think the 12-step program and the counseling and all of that would work so much better. But those cravings can come on, and they're overwhelming, and they can come on at any time. We're actually, interestingly, Chuck, collaborating with two professors at University of North Carolina on a technology that will reduce cravings in addiction, that may be a more effective way to combine with the traditional, 12-step program and counseling. But if you can reduce those cravings, then the relapse won't be as common, right?
Yeah. May I ask what this study involves? Is it a therapy type of thing, or is it something technologically new?
It's not exactly new, but it's new for addiction, I think. It's brain stimulation, and it's targeting certain of the brain waves. And I can't get into all the technicalities of it, but you go through sessions of brain stimulation at a very, very, very low safe frequency. But when you use opioids, your brain patterns change. And if you can nudge those brain patterns back to normal, then you'll not have those cravings as much as you did. And so then it's much easier to overcome the cravings and the triggers and everything that you might have.
Interesting, because I hear a lot of times people talk about the different frequencies and how it will, reshape our brainwave and set us straight or whatever it is, or put us in a certain mood, whether it's relaxed or whether it's in a heightened awareness state. So it sounds like maybe it's something similar to that, but
yeah,
more direct stimulation.
Yeah, they've been using this for depression, and they've had some promising results. It has been used. It's called transcranial alternating current stimulation, and the alternating current seems to work better than just a consistent a current. But it's very low, very safe. And seems to have promise. So we are supporting that, and 50% of the proceeds from my book are going to that.
That's right. Perfect time to mention your book. It is A Voice from Heaven. We're going to talk about that in just a moment. And who helped you author the book? So and that's going to be very exciting to hear from you.
Yeah, that's the astonishing, amazing story, right, Chuck? It was my son after he passed. I'll just tell this story. As I mentioned, we had been gifted a session with a medium about 1 year after he died. You know, that 1 year anniversary is really tough. And I was really struggling with pain and grief. And so I went and had a session with another medium. And not only did she suggest that I write a book, she suggested that I write it in 6 weeks. And I was like, whoa, you know, 6 weeks. And then she said, and I think you should write it in Alec's voice. I think you should let his voice be heard from heaven. And I said, how in the world would I do that? And she said, I can tell you exactly what to do. It's called automatic writing. And she told me to sit down at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, before dawn, when I'm still half asleep, no caffeine, you know, don't get up and try to wake up. Just sit down and say with full intention that I'm going to write with my son today. I'm going to write with Alec today. And, you know, ask Alec to be there with you writing and put a plea into your spirit guide and his spirit guide to help the words flow from him. And so that's what I did. The first day I was like, I don't know if this is going to work, you know, and I sat down and I did all of that. And I started kind of writing, you know, here I am, sitting here waiting to see if Alec's going to join. And because I was half asleep, my mind started wandering a little bit, and I started thinking about what was it like when Alec got high? You know, what did he feel like? Why was it so enticing to him? And all of a sudden, it wasn't my thoughts anymore. There were thoughts coming into my head that weren't mine. And it was Alec, and he was explaining to me, you know, what it was like. And then he started explaining his journey step by step after he died into the afterlife. And it was truly, truly astonishing.
Well, like we were saying at the very, very beginning, at the top of the hour, your credentials go in line with people who would assume and say, you know, that type of person is not going to believe in this. But you allowed yourself to be open and accepting whatever was coming to you, right? I think maybe a lot of times if we are getting those signals, those messages, we block them or we ignore them, like junk noise coming in. And rather than sitting there and listening and understanding what it is and realizing that it is your loved one or someone from the other side actually crossing over to communicate, whether it be in pictures or words. I just think this is amazing how he really opened up to you. And I mean, like you said, through his voice, I helped you write this. And then especially about the steps of getting into heaven and what heaven is like.
Yeah. I mean, It was totally amazing. As you said, I am a scientist. My background is in biostatistics and epidemiology, and I was very skeptical about all of this. You know, I had not had any experience whatsoever, no psychic experience whatsoever before. And But I was determined that if it was going to work, that I was going to do it, you know. Yeah. And I wanted to be open to it because I felt like I really wanted to talk to him, and yeah. I really wanted to know what it was like. And so when he started coming through, you know, I still was like, well, is that really him? You know, is that really his? Are those thoughts that are popping into my brain really his voice? Is that really mm-hmm. his voice? Is it really his thoughts? And, you know, it took several sessions for me to totally accept that it was him because, you know, I thought maybe it's just my inner thoughts, my, you know, subconscious saying all of this. But I could tell, you know, as a mom, you know, your son's personality, you know, his sense of humor. And after a few sessions, it really became very clear that it really was Alec. He had a unique personality. He had Asperger's and ADHD. He had a really great sense of humor, but a little off sense of humor. And so it was very recognizable. And so it really was astonishing. But the things that he shared with me, I describe in the book. I mean, it was this sort of a tunnel kind of effect that he went through at first. There was a bright, bright light at the end of it. But the tunnel, he said, wasn't really a tunnel. It was a swirling of light, of you know, dark, a little darkness with light. And so it was a cylindrical kind of thing that he went through, but it was made of light. And then he went towards the bright light. He was astonished. There was this vastness of the universe, basically. And he was immediately overcome with this love and sense of total acceptance, total forgiveness for everything, total unconditional love. And then he was met by his ancestors and his relatives that have passed. My dad, you know, his grandfather on and grandmother on my husband's side, and ancestors, they all surrounded him, totally accepting. So we hear that from NDEs, right? You know, that mm-hmm. these are the types of stories that we hear from them. But he went way beyond that. He took me through, they led him down a path of like an infinite number of paths. He would have been totally lost if they hadn't been there. They pointed him and guided him to the right path. He went through a light bath that was sort of like a shower of light to help cleanse him from some of the pain and hurt and struggles that he had had in his physical life. And then he went on to his life review. And that was a very interesting thing. His life review was a review of all the decisions that he ever made in his entire life. Wow. And what the impact of those decisions were on other people. So emotionally, he felt how those decisions impacted others. And he also described that every decision that he made, the alternative decision was also reviewed. And it was a learning. It was a learning from all the decisions that he made or didn't make, or alternative decisions that he could have made, and how that could help him learn as a soul. Because okay. what he described was our life here on Earth in our physical bodies is we are spirits having an experience to help learn how to be more loving and compassionate. And so the learning is all about that. So it was totally amazing, Chuck.
I was just going to use that word. It is amazing how detailed that he was. Just, you know, I'm going to use the word talking to you. Mm-hmm. And the other thing, once again, is, you know, if a loved one passes away and something like this happens to you, you're feeling something, you're hearing not crazy voices, you know, like run or anything like that. But if you hear these things or if you feel these things, let yourself be open to it, because it could be that person reaching out to you.
Yeah.
I want to ask you, how long after Alec died that this happened, that you went through this?
It was about a year and 3 weeks. I remember it very well because I remember the date. It was just after his anniversary, the anniversary of his first, you know, the first anniversary of his death. And I had that medium session on a Wednesday, and I sat down on Saturday morning to start trying to write with him. And then I did it every morning. I got up, and I'm not a morning person. I got up every morning for 8 weeks straight, pretty much. I missed a few days, but for 8 weeks. And we wrote together and got to the first draft of the book.
Like you said earlier, that the first anniversary is usually that one that really hits you hard. But I also want folks to know that, you know, this could take a year before somebody reaches out, before your loved one reaches out, or before you accept that noise, that signal, that whatever it is that's coming to you. It could have been saying, "Mom, Mom," the whole time, and you're just like, psh, you know. But be open to it.
Yeah, he explained to me, I mean, you're spot on, Chuck. He explained to me that right after the death, he could not have reached me because I was in too much grief. And so when you're in profound grief, you can't get that communication going. So I think what really helped me to get to the point where I could be receptive was accepting that I was going to be in grief the rest of my life, but I needed to live my life. And he wanted me to live my life, and he was okay. You know, he was fine. He was thriving in the afterlife. He's happy and in bliss. So it's me that misses him, and I'm always going to miss him, but I still need to get on with my life. And I'm not saying to push the grief back and repress it. What I'm saying is that I had to learn how to walk beside it so that I could live my life. And that's when I think I became more receptive to this.
I like how you say you really walk alongside. And you know, earlier we were talking about the recovery of the addict and stuff. And so the recovery of the person that's alive, that's going through it, is very difficult as well. And recovery to me on that is there are still triggers. You know, we all go places with our loved one, whether it's a carnival or to a particular walking trail or whatever it is, and those things can trigger it. And as you said, your son Alec said and wants you to be happy and to live your life. And I think many people need to learn that it's okay to let go of that, because they are always going to be there. As long as you have a heart, they're always going to be there with you. So, and I would also think that the person, the loved one that passed, would want you, the living person, to do just that, live.
Yes.
You know?
Yes, they do. They really do. They want you to live your life. He told me to get out in nature more, to travel, to do the things that I really enjoy, because this is an experience. Don't waste this experience, you know? And it really, the whole experience, Chuck, led me, it was life transforming for me, truly. It made me really look at what my purpose is in life, what I'm doing with my life, what I'm focusing on. And I have kind of switched my focus some. I'm still working as a consultant in epidemiology and biostatistics, but I'm also focusing probably half my time on the addiction research, raising awareness about Kratom. We are working with a studio to try to come up with a pitch deck and a teaser for a documentary on Kratom to help raise that awareness. We're trying to raise funds to help support the addiction research so that the professors can apply for a NIDA grant to do a national trial to make this technology accessible to people who need it. So, I mean, that helping others is what coming out of that whole experience, it was clear that that's what I needed to do. Help others in grief, help others with addiction. Yeah.
I guess that goes along with what we first talked about, is what has changed since the death of your son. And I would not to be insensitive, but I want to add to this, and we hear this a lot, you know, the phrase of live every day like it's your last, but don't wait for or until or the death of someone to allow yourself just to allow yourself to do the things that you have passion for and love. You can do that now. Don't wait for something else. Right. But sometimes it does take that shock to wake you up to say, you know, I want to help, whatever. So,
my favorite quote that Alec gave to me during the writing of the book was, don't let life happen to you. Make life happen for you. And that has become my motto, because, you know, I have always had anxiety myself. I've always been an anxious person. He even alluded to a lot of my fears in the book, you know, that I need to overcome those and let them go. And I think it's true. I think we get wrapped up in the stress of our everyday lives and what we are trying to accomplish and do, as opposed to taking a step back and thinking about life as an experience. When you do that, the stress is not as great as it is when you're in it. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Take a step back. It's an experience. Don't worry about things so much. Just live your life and enjoy it.
That's well put. Yes. Cindy, is there a website that you have perhaps that folks can go to, order your book, because 50% of the proceeds, go to helping, you know, whether I'm not sure if it's for the studies, but if you could let us know what your proceeds, where they go, maybe, but definitely let us know where folks can go.
And you can donate directly as well on the website to the research. The website is called wingsofpeacepress.com. And there's a book trailer, and there are some blogs and interviews, and there's a big donate tab that you can use to donate if you'd like to donate to the research on treatment for addiction.
Thank you. This has been really great. I think this is something we could really go on and on and on and on to talk about, you know, because one thing, addiction and grief, unfortunately, never ends.
No.
There's always somebody else. There's always someone else that is going through grief, that has addiction, that is going through recovery. And I thank you for, you know, sharing the story and really, really trying to help everyone on both sides, all sides, every side. So
thank you, Chuck. It was really a pleasure talking to you.
You're welcome. Hey, I hope you found that podcast to be of interest to you. And I know a lot of us go through grief. A lot of us have some trauma. A lot of us need help, and it's okay to ask for help. So if you're feeling depressed or anything like that, please reach out to someone, reach out to a professional, and get your help that you need, because it is okay to ask for help. Once again, a quick reminder, if you are a pet owner, please be responsible, and you know what? Have your pets spayed or neutered. Thanks for following, thanks for watching, and please share and like. Until next time, have a great day and be safe. Bye-bye.